You're listening to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
Hey, it's Scott Lips, and welcome back to yet another episode of Spin Magazine's Lip Service. I'm joined today by the editorial director of Spin Magazine, my friend, Mr. Daniel Cohen. How are you, my brother?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think you're going to really enjoy this show. We're joined today by the brothers in Palais Royal, Sebastian, Remington, Emerson. They have a lot to say, as usual.
Yeah, they had a lot to say. There's some scoops in there, some tributes to some of their favorites, and a little bit of news in there at the end, too.
The new record, Fever Dream, just came out. They just finished the tour, a great show at the Palladium. I'm excited to bring this to you live in just a moment. The brothers in Palais Royal with my friend, Mr. Daniel Cohen.
Let's rock.
You're listening to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
Our show today is brought to you by the fine folks at Thursday's Boot Company. You guys have seen me rocking these boots in every other picture I have on Instagram. I'm always repping them. Thursday's Boots is a bootstrap startup that makes the best handcrafted boots and sells them direct to consumer at some of the lowest markups in the footwear industry. Thursday's Boots tagline is highest quality, honest prices because they use some of the best materials like full grain leather, supple glove leather lining, and gold standard Goodyear welt construction. Thursday's Boot Company sells their boots at prices starting at just $149 with free shipping and returns. They've been featured in all the best fashion press, from Esquire to GQ to Cosmo and Vogue. More importantly, they've gotten over 20,000 five-star reviews from real customers. Thursday's boots are perfect for people who understand quality and don't want to pay a high retail markup for a great-looking pair of boots that are built to last. So check them out at Thursday's Boots on Instagram. My favorite shoes, my favorite boots. You always see me repping them. You'll love it.
You're listening to Lips LA with Scott Lips.
Here we are, the boys in Palais Royal. How are you guys?
Hello.
Wonderful.
Good. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for coming in so early, by the way. I got nervous, I was saying, when I saw you last night, Sebastian, at like 11:30. You're not really morning people.
No, we're not. But I got up early today. I'm fucking stoked.
To be clear, it's not 8 o'clock in the morning for those of you listening at home. Right. Or 6 o'clock in the morning. It's a little bit later in the day.
It's 11:30.
Yeah. But Remington, I also saw you were in the studio with like a little Huddy last night. So, yeah. Again, I just get nervous because you're not you're sort of nocturnal. I think you do your best work at night.
Yeah, right? I can't really function during sunlight hours. So.
Well, it goes with the whole vampire theme that we'll
get
into.
Yeah, a little bit of that, and also just it takes a few hours for my brain to really turn on.
That's true.
Wait, did you just say studio?
Yeah.
Already working?
Last night.
Oh.
Mm. Oh, yeah, but we're already working on new stuff.
But last night you were in the studio with Little Huddy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Can we talk about that or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, he's, we're just collabing on a song together, and he's such a fucking sweet kid. And, you know, he just wants to make some fucking good rock music. And we were just there, and we just blew his mind with some riffs and some fucking heavy screams and shit. And honestly, it's a great track, and he's a fucking sweet kid.
It's like Little Huddy goes screamo or something, right?
A little bit. It's we're kind of influencing a little bit of a heavier rock sound with him.
Like, and Sebastian, we were talking, you were at the Harry Styles show.
I exited the studio to go see Harry Styles. Sure. It was a good excuse.
Very, very timely, by the way. Me and Daniel were speaking about it's on the heels of the Grammy nomination. So
yeah.
How was the show? I heard you
fantastic.
couldn't hear anything. People were
but
screaming.
But didn't get someone throw something at him again?
I think the night before someone threw Skittles at his eyes and like they thought that he wasn't going to be able to see or something. I don't know. But it's strange because the Harry Styles crowd, they don't like scream after. They scream the whole song. And then when the song's done, they have this chant that goes, ooh, 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 ooh. Every song. And you're like, you look around and he's like, is this a football game? It's the weirdest thing of a bunch of 16-year-old girls just doing,
You can't hear the music. It's like the Beatles or something.
I couldn't hear it. The screams were so loud. They were mostly coming from me, but you know, it was crazy.
Did you see Ben Harper open for him?
I didn't. I saw him. He went on stage. I got there late because I was in the studio with them. But
it
Ben
just
Harper
seems like
great.
An interesting pairing.
It was interesting because when they brought Ben Harper, he was like, he did the encore. And he's like, I want to bring my favorite person on that wrote a song on the record, Ben Harper. And it's such an interesting pairing, especially for the audience of Harry Styles fans, like especially One Direction fans. They probably definitely don't know who Ben Harper is.
Right.
But at least he's able to influence at least a different type of music versus being the obvious opener for him that would have probably been. He's able to like curate things that he likes artistically.
And cool. He was nominated also for a Grammy for a blues album, so he couldn't get any different than that.
Jeez.
Well, there's a lot to unpack here, obviously. I think we were just talking about it before you came in. You guys have been on the show now like 4 times. So thank you for not only being my great friend,
of course,
but being like, and we work together.
We love
there's
it
so
here.
Much. Yeah. 4-time alumni, I guess. So a lot to get into the new record, Fever Dream, obviously. We were just chatting about the record, the sold out tour. You just did a tour with Mod Sun and and a lot of dates with Youngblood that you just finished. And I believe that you just announced something like on your Instagram. It might have been today. I don't even know what it was. Like a mysterious 9 a.m., 5 a.m., 2 p.m. I don't know what that is.
It's the weirdest thing.
I don't even know what it is.
It was for 2 years with the pandemic and making the record. There was no press. There was nothing going on about the band. And then this month, it's like a new magazine cover like every 3 or 4 days. So it's another magazine cover.
Amazing. Yeah. By the way, you guys look great. We were just speaking about your suit. Sebastian, the only time I've not seen you dressed like this is potentially when you're jogging, which I don't really see you jogging, but I hear that you don't wear this when you're jogging.
I wear a Puma tracksuit. I'm trying to get that endorsement. I'm trying to take it from Dua Lipa. But
Puma.
Yeah, Puma.
Good for her. She earned it.
Obviously.
Yeah, but pretty much majority of the clothing comes from like our custom suit line or the cosmetic company, you know. Like everything is pretty much Palais in some way.
We were joking. Next time we do this, me and Daniel will be like dressed up in 3-piece suits. Yeah. We'll be wearing hats. It'll be a whole.
It's all like, about the vibe. Little like monocles, little canes.
It's the Step Brothers thing when they walk in and they're wearing suits.
We're not going to look like the Monopoly guys.
It's really cool if you do.
Well, listen, I just saw you all at the Palladium. It was a fantastic show. I didn't get to see you after. It's definitely the best show I've ever seen you perform ever. And so, congratulations. It's funny, you left your house like 2015. You really never looked back. Yeah. You've been touring ever since. And I love the story of how you were like passing out flyers at the Wiltern 2015. I think maybe it was the Arctic Monkeys. I'm not sure who you were passing out flyers in front of.
Yeah, it was Arctic Monkeys. Anyone we could really go to a concert and just pass out flyers for. We did it with when Lord was playing, Arctic Monkeys, Arcade Fire, we passed out flyers.
It's been interesting to see our like trajectory, and it's a nice staging that we can do in LA. We were passing out flyers at the El Rey and then the Fonda and the Wiltern and the Palladium. So it's now we've sold out all those venues going up. Palladium wasn't sold out, but it was definitely a full house, and it was a nice show. But it's cool to see we keep on climbing, kind of like the ranks, and to like it's a cool thing to have, because everywhere else in Europe and stuff, it will jump from 250 people to 4,000 people. So it's like the jumps in Europe are insane, but America, it's like, all right, you go up another 200 people, another 500 people.
You got to work for it. Yeah. So, you know, we're definitely we're putting in the effort. Yeah. But honestly, it was just so cool. We were like all on cloud nine because, you know, it's funny. Like I've seen so many shows at the Palladium. And actually, like we were there during soundcheck and seeing it with nobody in it during soundcheck, I was like, fuck, this is a big room. Yeah. And then it was just like, it felt so good to go on that stage and just seeing the floor just covered with people, and then like the balconies. It was a beautiful moment. I'm really proud of us for doing that.
And the Palladium. And next step is after Palladium, it's the Shrine, and then you're playing arenas.
Yeah.
So you're definitely trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's the way you want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remington always wanted to do the Greek, but then always the risk that you run into with the Greek is it's such a quiet venue.
DB limit.
Right. And we're such a loud band.
True.
Like
that's
our
true.
Amps on stage would already be past the DB limit. So.
But when you and I met, you were playing the Roxy. So it's great to see this meteoric rise and sort of been with you this whole time, like watching you grow. And we were speaking a lot about what happened during the tour. I mean, it's crazy what happened. I mean, your tour manager quit. You know, I believe the lighting guy quit like a day before the Palladium.
Yeah.
And you've always kind of been involved in the management. Yeah. So, I mean,
three tour buses broke down.
Yeah, like what
the first day, we have two tour buses, one for the crew, one for the band. We're like, this is gonna be magical, this is awesome. I woke up, I was gonna fly to the first gig, it was 9 a.m. I get a call, they're like, yeah, the bus hasn't left. I was like, what do you mean? You were supposed to leave 12 hours ago. They're like, yeah, we're still at the rehearsal room. Both buses broke down. We packed up, I missed my flight, went there, got a U-Haul, packed up everything. We drove to Phoenix, got there, played 20 minutes before doors, got there and set up. And then like a week later, our tour manager quit. And then I tour managed the whole entire tour. So it's just the responsibility is just no matter what level we get to, I always feel like we're still touring in our mom's car. You know?
It keeps you honest, right?
I'm over it. I'm over it. I just want to enjoy like, playing music.
I feel like we're the biggest fucking amateur band of all fucking time, because everything that happens in our life, we're just like, this is such an amateur production. I'm like, we're fucking carrying lights on the stage ourselves. We're like these guys were sleeping on merch boxes because our trailer broke. Like, I was like, this didn't we already pass this stage in our lives? I was like, why the fuck are we still sleeping on merch boxes?
So it doesn't have the same romantic feel that it had years ago then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, your mother kind of used to manage the band, like, early on, right?
Yeah,
very early on. So you probably got that in a way from your family just growing up around. I think your mom like was like, all right, you play piano, you play drum, right? You were all trying to find your instrument early on.
Yeah, she gave us piano lessons when we were super young as kids, which was great. And then we just kind of took the music to where we have been now. But I think it's luckily she was a rock and roll photographer, so she introduced us to, like, the collection was, you know, Bowie and T-Rex, but she was out on tour with, like, Stiv Bators and Johnny Thunders. So, like, the rock history was, you know, the truest form you possibly can get. So we were basically getting the best schooling of music from day one. So.
I can definitely say our mothers were not on tour with Johnny Thunders. I don't know about your mother, Daniel, but I know my mother was not.
She was not.
It's interesting, too. And we were talking, like, right before COVID, I heard this story. You got in a fist fight, right? Like, there's something, you guys were on mushrooms. There was at an Austrian petrol station or something.
Yeah.
Gasoline station for everyone else in the U.S. But, right? Tell me that story.
So.
I know you, so that seems about right. But
that's 100% accurate.
Yeah,
right.
So.
We were playing Reading and Leeds Fest, and we were just going on four years of hard touring. We just didn't stop. And we were in a Sprinter van, and we were just all getting on each other's fucking nerves.
We just got to the bus stage, and we're like, you know what? It's 3 days. We could do a Sprinter. It's fine. We could do hotels in a Sprinter. And never then, go back.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound promising at all.
No, because we did, like...
We're like, why are we sitting so close to each other?
You know, from Tokyo to Australia and then to Reading and Leeds. And so we were just not sleeping at all because so many flights, and obviously we can't afford first class. So we're like shoved between like three people, and you're just like, and then you get off the plane, I have to immediately play a show. So we're not sleeping, we're fucking cranky. And then I was like, you know what, shrooms will make us feel better.
I almost brought some today, but I figured
that would have been perfect. This would have been like the first 6-hour podcast. Just talking about life.
We have it filmed. So
yeah, we do have it filmed.
When we do our documentary.
I got to release that.
Sure.
It's not the best fight you would imagine. I'm sure in their head it felt like.
It felt so serious. And then looking back, it's just like.
Remington did, though.
Emerson was like, okay, rules, you can't punch each other in the face. We're like, okay, fine. And then
so
I
it's like
saw Anchorman. His face.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then I saw his face, and I was like, I have to punch it. And then it was probably the worst fight you've ever seen.
It's gotten better, though. I think that was probably the last fist fight we've been in.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I was telling Daniel, because he doesn't know the story about how you guys used to literally punch each other in the face before you went on stage.
Even on stage.
On stage, right. Yeah. So.
We would, our friend that lives with us from Crown the Empire, his favorite story, like, telling anyone that's, like, brand new to our circus, is, like, he was watching Side Stage once, and, like, we, like, spit on each other or whatever. And he always tries to talk to me during shows, and I have no idea what he's saying.
Right. And then he'll just go up and go, hurra, hurra, hurra. And I'm like, what? And then, like, because he looks angry when he's saying it.
So then, like,
but sometimes he's actually saying, you're doing a great job. Right. And then I was like, why don't you go fuck yourself? And then we just.
I don't think it was that time, but like I like spit at him and I threw a drumstick and then he kicked like half of my drums away.
This is while we're playing. So at that point we were just plug and play, like there was nothing else. And but the moment you lose the drum set and a guitar,
like,
you're just like
when we were growing up, we were like chess players, but we also did ice hockey. So like we have this like strategic anger within us, you know,
the Canadian in you.
Yeah.
It sounds like a crazy hardcore show, though, the way you guys are describing it.
Well, the shows, I think, due to where we were thrown into when we got evicted and we got signed, we're like, well, what do we do? And they're like, well, you got no money. You guys should go work a job. And we're like, well, we're just gonna go tour then.
Yeah.
And so like,
so we took any opening slot.
Yeah.
And then that
we
resulted
did
in
not
like
want to get any
being
job.
One of five for like deathcore metal bands
and playing like in.
You're literally playing for pizza and beer, and I think our guarantee was $25.
Wow. Yeah.
For like 2 years.
That being around that environment and us just doing what we were doing, it kind of like formed and molded us into this like having to be a bit more aggressive on stage. Like I would destroy my drum kit.
Remington would be 20 feet up from the rafters jumping
in
the crowd.
That's kind of why
you know?
I started going crazy on stage because, you know, the first couple shows opening for like a bunch of death metal bands, you know, you can't get away with just take it off your shirt and
tough crowd.
It does not work for that crowd.
And we
so you
still always
to...
looked like this. Like in, no matter where we've been in our lives, we are true to our individuality because that's all we know how to do. Like I don't know how to be. I don't know how to dress different. So like even going to open for like a death metal band, it's like we're still gonna do what we do. You know, and I think that's a really important lesson that we've kind of integrated into our fans' identity. Where it's like, no matter who you're with, as long as you feel true to yourself, that's all that matters in this world.
By the way, what was the strangest bill you've ever been on?
Oh, there's a lot of weird ones.
Was it like Tiffany and you and like Celtic Frost or something? No, I'm just joking.
We did play. We weren't on the same bill, but we did play the same night as it was Mayhem and then Rotting Christ.
Oof.
And that was,
yeah.
You know, so it was. Being around all those people.
That, you didn't wear the makeup on that show, or maybe did you?
Oh yeah,
you did.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, it's weird because they're so those bands are so intricate with like their basically art design from the album covers to their stage show, and Emerson was you know so enamored because he does all the artwork and he walked up there and they had this massive backdrop that was really intricate. And
like, this band called Watane, which. In death metal band, and it was like early in our career, so I didn't really know like tour etiquette where you can't just kind of like go on walk around and like go on people's stage and shit. And I did, and there was this beautiful because I love drawing and stuff, and there was this beautiful like Renaissance looking backdrop, and I go on the stage, and I was like, oh, who drew this? Who did this art? And it was like some Swedish guy goes, get the fuck off my stage, or I will kill you. And I was like, fair enough.
By the way, you don't want to mess around with Mayhem. If I remember correctly, yeah. It's one of the Norwegian like black metal, but yeah, they're not. Yeah. It's no joke over there. Those people are like killing each other. It's
yeah,
not really.
No,
you don't want to mess around with the
did
stage.
You see the movie?
I did. Great, and I, that's what film. I mean. You don't want to.
That's what inspired. Actually, we were watching that movie on loop for the Bastards era. Which probably wasn't the best, but
yeah, we were in the middle.
We were
fucking
in the middle.
Joshua Tree, not a neighbor for a half a mile, you know. And
we were watching Lords of Chaos.
We were watching, and then like The Hills Have Eyes. We were watching fucked up movies, and then just and then we're like, oh, let's go fucking heavy, and then we made you know the Bastards record, which I'm actually really proud of.
Yeah, I enjoy that one.
I like parts of it.
You know, it was fun because like. There's no fucking rules to this thing, you know, which is great. You know, sometimes, you know, we want to go heavier and sometimes we want to go more of a pop route. You know, if we have a country song in us, we're going to fucking do that. You know,
I think that's like, I think Line It Up was like a beautiful thing. It was, we were literally just playing while Chris was pretty, when we were doing the Fever Dream album, Chris was sitting at the computer doing his thing, editing, and we're just like, can we just get on and I start playing like these cowboy chords?
Remington,
what was the original?
I can't remember.
But he was singing in a country accent.
I was going full twang, and then like when I was doing the recording, Chris had to stop it during Line It Up. He's like, okay, you're doing the twang too much. You gotta stop.
And then LP came on the track, and that was just like, oh, wow, all right, cool. And I think that's the weirdest thing for our career. It's never been like, here's the silver platter, and like you're going to be able to do whatever you want. It's always been like, you have to earn your every step of the way. And I think it always keeps you hungry, which is the good thing. You know, it's never like anything's solved out for you. So when you do get those like accomplishments of like touring and doing our first arena shows in Europe, you just have such more of care and appreciation for it. And having like LP coming on a track, it's like
it was huge. Yeah.
But it was out of just us meeting one night, getting fucked up, played her the song. She's like, I want to be a part of it.
There's got to be more to the story than that.
No, literally, we're sitting at her house drinking wine. I was playing her the song, and she's like. One of my favorite songs I've heard in a long time. She texts me the next day and she's like, can I please be on that track?
By the way, you say it casually, but yeah. Your friends over your house are like Post Malone's over your house, LP's over your house, you don't have Måneskin's over your house. Yeah. Like, you don't have me and Daniel of your house. It's like you have like, literally, you're like, what are you doing tonight? I know, but I just mean like Post Malone's over my house tonight. These are your friends that are literally Pussy Riot, right? I think Nadia's a great friend
of yours. She's on one of her tracks. Yeah. She's so cool.
I just think it's because when people genuinely see us, it doesn't matter where we are on a status level of like success. They just realize that we're genuine musicians that give a shit about art. And then you end up meeting like-minded people like a Post Malone that actually gives a shit about music. And then like Måneskin, they care about music. And they care about the arts and everything that surrounds it and being original. And
also, we're pretty fun to party with.
Yeah.
That's true. I think when you reach a certain point of like touring for so long, you reach this point where you just like you want to hang out with people that will just like cut the bullshit, and it's like it doesn't have to be this like facade. It's just like we're all here. Just have a good time.
You can just relax. You can just have fun.
It's not a social media photo shoot that you have to like. Oh, we're with each other. We need to take a picture. It's like no.
And the great thing is like the funny thing is when we're like hanging out with all the people like the last thing that we talk about is like the fucking music industry. That's the fucking last thing we want.
Like, why would you want? It's like talking about work. Why would you want to talk about work when you're hanging out with your friends?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I can't tell you how many like parties I've gone to where it's just only talking about music. I was like, yeah, dude, I live it every fucking second of every day. I'm like, let's talk about fucking the weather. I don't give a fuck. Let's talk about Costco prices. This is great. You know?
By the way, I mean, talking about partying, like, I don't think I have been to a strip club in like 20 years since my like care metal days. And I went with you. Yep. And then we literally
I don't know, it's like, I don't know, it was on La Cienega.
I forget them. It's always these weird names, but we got kicked out.
My fiance got us kicked out in the first Wait, you can't drop that story and about getting kicked out and just not share it.
You haven't met his fiance.
she's very original.
I'll let Sebastian tell the story. But
we walked in and she went to go buy lap dances for all the girls that were there. And then she was in the room and then they're like, you can't be here. She's like, but I paid like, you know, $500 for like three dances for everybody.
But she didn't say it like that. Probably.
No, she said it like that.
And then they were like, you need to get out of here. And then one of her friends got on the stripper pole. And I'm like, all right, this is me and Scott have stayed on there. We're like, we're just
Which gonna... I don't think you could do. I don't think you're allowed to just randomly jump on stage. Yeah. Not that I've been in 20 years.
It was that Simpsons Homer thing going through the hedges. You're just like, get out of here.
Well, let's talk about the new record. Obviously, you had a lot of time to make this record. And you were pretty prolific. I mean, during this time period, during the pandemic, you were doing like live shows. Yeah. You were still kind of finding a way to be pretty active. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about like how this came about. And my favorite thing about this record is that you did it in like a haunted house or something, right?
Haunted mansion.
It was my house and it was haunted.
Yeah, it was haunted. Yeah. But the Bastards album came out in 2020 and there was, you know, right in the middle of pandemic, Black Lives Matter was happening that week. So there was like the moment that record came out, we're like, we're not even talking about it. There's a lot more important things in the world happening. And then the next week we're like, well, let's make another album. And so we went to Malibu and we rented a beach house with our friend Chris. And, you know, that was the first album he produced by himself. And now he's gone on to doing the whole Youngblood record, Willow record, Use Tumor record.
Now he's too good for us, aren't you, Chris?
He's like the fourth member.
He's like our fucking best friend.
He told us, he's like, all right, if you guys aren't cool, we were really in a dark place of being, we couldn't be in the same room with one another. And he's like, if you're not cool with one another and like treat each other with respect, I'm not going to make this record with you. So it really put us in our place, but it actually stuck. Now we actually enjoy being around one another.
Yeah.
And we just spent literally Monday through Fridays, every single day, just working on the record, writing.
There was so much Postmates. There was so much time
we had, but also we were being very diligent, but also made the time of being, when everyone felt like they were stuck, we were just creating. And we were hanging out with the same like 10, 15 people on the weekends. And it was like, all right, cool. We gained a lot of great friends, had a lot of great relationships. We're making the best album that we've ever made together that we all truly enjoy. And I think that's since our first album, we haven't had it that we've all been on the same page that we're like, we're stoked about everything together.
Yeah.
How important was the vibe? And was it were you right on the beach or were you up in the hills?
We were right on the beach.
So how important was that to like the sunny disposition of what was to come in the writing process? It just felt like we were on vacation the whole time. And it was kind of like in a place of it being such a hard situation for the rest of the world, it was a much needed break for our careers, bad as it is to say. Like, we were able to at least be humans again. And it was like, all right, cool. We're not feeling any vibes. Let's go swim. And we had this thing called Sunset Swim. We just go
mandatory swims. You had to wake up every morning, go boogie boarding,
have a shot.
Yeah.
It's very summer camp.
It was great.
It was amazing. We spent like, 2 weeks at the beach. And to be honest, I kind of forgot that the pandemic was happening. So I walked back out and tried to go into a grocery store. And they're like, where's your fucking mask? I was like, oh, my God, that's right. It's the world is fucked right now.
And then we kind of, like, recorded the whole thing at our house. It was, like, right across the street from the Hollywood Bowl. And it was beautiful. It was definitely haunted. Like, the original guy that lived there, because it's in the Whitley Heights, like, historic thing. So the first person that moved in there was, his name was Maurice Chevalier. It's like this Frank Sinatra, like French singer. It's really cool, amazing. But he like massacred his wife in the house.
Wow.
Yeah. And then
it's got to be some bad vibes in that house.
I think it's weird vibes, for sure. Like I do all this like Dracula dark kind of like Chopin style piano stuff. I did this like side project called Alistair, which like is the soundtrack for our graphic novel. So while I was recording and stuff, I would hear this like this man talking in the other room. in my headphones, and I'll take it off, and he didn't hear anything. So I think there was like certain frequencies.
Was that Chris, or was that just
no, I was alone. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But I think like as long as you create a good atmosphere and a good energy, you know, like ghosts won't fuck with you.
Yeah, and you got. Did you feel that vibe of? Okay, so
because like after this guy murdered his wife. There was another death in the house. It was like this actress that moved into the house in like the 60s, and she OD'd in the house.
See, I would not want to be in that house. I don't know about you, Daniel, because I don't feel like
this. I didn't know this, so because like, we did research after. I was like, okay, so there was one.
It wasn't us, even. It was people that were coming over to our house, and they would like see these things, and then they started researching, and then they told us. They're like, yeah, about this.
There was one night that I just got so freaked out. So I was walking downstairs, just going to get some water. I was sober. So I was like, I wasn't like seeing some crazy shit. And so walk downstairs, just go get some water before I go to bed. And then like, I just see this woman in like a white dress just going to the bathroom. And I'm just like, fucking run upstairs, start screaming to bloody hell. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then Andy's like, my roommate, he was like, dude, what's going on? I was like, dude, there's a lady in a white dress in the bathroom. And he goes, dude, you're tripping out. I was like, no, I'm not. I swear to God. And then we both go downstairs to go walk. And then the light bulb in my chandelier just goes and then breaks.
That wasn't the night you were on mushrooms, right?
No.
Called a Ghostbusters, man.
Right?
So that was terrifying. And then like two nights after, I see like I'm like just sleeping. And then I keep hearing my roommate run up and down the stairs like crazy, just up and down. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And so I run to go fucking scream at him. And then I was like, no one was there. I go into his room. He's completely passed out. I was like, what the fuck?
See, so, I just wouldn't. I would get out of there in 2 seconds. I don't think I would hang out in the house.
We moved. Yeah, we moved. Okay. So
that's crazy. Well, let's talk about the tour for a moment. Obviously, you just got back. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to Dan about this. You know, when you're on stage, like I was at the Webster Hall show the other day, and literally I turned around behind me. I was on the balcony, and you were behind me. You're like, I've never seen a singer that dynamic in my whole. I've seen a lot of singers that are climbing on, you know, scaffolding, but never like literally on the balcony behind me. I was like, where the fuck? How did this happen? You know, so
just Lance Burton shit. Just
yeah. Like, do you ever get yourself in trouble? Have you climbed up and stuff, and things happen?
I get in trouble all the time. From venues,
Live Nation has a problem.
Well, does the tour manager get upset about it?
That would be me. I know. No, I don't care. I'm like, go for it.
He actually has a letter from the UK government that
they're deeming me a threat to the people.
Yeah. Oh, wow!
Because apparently I'm a safety hazard to.
We were banned from any live audience. All O2s for a little bit. I think we're fine now.
Yeah, because we sold enough tickets, they're like, all right, we want you back.
You're banned for 3 minutes.
Yeah,
but like. Yeah, I think when he's doing his thing, if he's climbing on rafters or he's hanging off a balcony, usually leave the crazy guy alone. But like when things get...
Yeah, we were at the Palladium and I was hanging over the balcony. And the security guard starts shaking me. I was like,
"Don't do
the last thing you want to do while someone's hanging over the balcony is shake them.
Yeah.
Especially when there's just a group. I was like, I know what I'm doing. I'm like, done this before because we were supposed to have someone clear it, but no one did. But... Yeah, that's never been good, but I have not fallen, so fucking, you know, knock on wood on that one. But because I've always looked up to Eddie Vedder, like, and watching those old Pearl Jam videos, he's a madman. And I remember watching those as a kid, and I was just like, oh my God, he's a fucking rock god. And like, you know, so I've always been inspired by him and like the, you know, the punk era. And like, I feel like there's not much of that in today's, you know, no.
But in a
artist.
Genuine way, you know, I mean, I think that's the
difference. Yeah, obviously where it's not forced.
I feel like there's so much of performance that people go on and they think it's a spectacle and they have to do it because it's something that they need to do. But when it's a genuine part of the performance and you're like, all right, that makes sense almost. It's like, that's what, you know, you respect when the band's good on stage, but when you can bring you can go home and listen to a record. And if it sounds like the record, great. But once you start adding elements that you're like, you go to the show because it's going to be different every single time. And it's not at this beat, Remington's going to do this thing. I'm always looking around. I'm like, where is he? And you know, we don't there's a lot of the songs we just can extend because he's gone for 10 minutes.
He's inside the bass drum.
Literally.
Well, we grew up in an era, you know, the Guns N' Roses era. Yeah. I mean, we could literally geek out on like Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, the B-sides and whatever it may be. So but when bands look like bands. So.
Exactly. What you described was what always was attractive about Pearl Jam to me is just the rawness, the energy, and the intensity.
Yeah.
And it's something that the fans pick up on and they don't let go of it because they know that they're getting an honest, real performance.
True. Yeah, yeah. And that's why, you know, Pearl Jam is obviously the music is fucking phenomenal, but, you know, they're still selling out multiple nights at stadiums every single night. And they've been a band for what, like 30, 40 years?
And the headliner tour that we were just on, towards the end especially, we would just start writing songs on stage, like in between the songs that we were going to play. And like we hit like a, we were all like tapped into something in San Francisco.
Yeah, we were at the Fillmore in San Francisco. And that was one, that was like, you know, you can't be in that room and not just do something somewhat cool. Like you're never going to be as cool as the history
the
that's
Doors
been there.
Is like one of our favorite bands. So we listened to The Doors before and after and everything. And I just looked at Andrew, our other guitar player, and I was like, give me some Pharaoh shit. And then we just kind of extended it for like 4 or 5 minutes or something. And it was amazing. And I don't think
it's that moment. But it's that moment in time that's captured for those people and us that's it.
Yeah,
that's
so
what the moment is.
We wrote
the
song just for that audience. I don't even remember it.
Which is
that
cool.
That was just for them, you know.
Well, how important, we were talking about it for a minute, but how important is image to you all? I mean, I know that we were joking around about you wearing that suit when you're jogging, but we grew up in a time period, again, we were talking about Guns N' Roses, and obviously I know that you're heavily influenced by the Stones and Zeppelin and bands like that. So, and you look at a lot of bands these days, and they have zero image. I mean, there are so many bands, actually some bands that have been on this show that I couldn't tell you who the singer was unless so... It's a real important part of it. One of the reasons I think we bond is because I love the fact that you're so image conscious and you're a great band, and I love your fashion sensibility.
I just we've always been about the art and the fashion and the music, and I think it's so important because all those are so intertwined. And you, as an artist, we're lucky that Emerson could do all the artwork and everything, and we can also style the band and we know how to do it. But sometimes it's like people have to always look for that to be. Craft who they are as people, and then there's no authenticness about it. But I think it's like when I go and see a show, the visuals, you want to see a visual, you want to, like, something needs to reel you in with the music, or the music reels you in, and then there's something that keeps you there. And it's interesting because a lot of people are like, I saw that band like scrolling and I saw it on Instagram, and they're like, oh, they looked cool, and then I checked out the music and it made sense, or they heard the song on the radio and then
I think
it all has
also
to be equal, and it's so important. I think that's tells the story of what you are as a band. And it's like, you wouldn't go see a movie if there was, you're going to go see a period piece movie and they're dressed in hoodies. It would just wouldn't make sense.
Yeah,
you know?
It's because I feel like, you know, you kind of, you know, you surround yourself, you know, with your environment, especially us growing up. And that was our environment growing up in Vegas, you know. Not once did we see a Vegas show where someone was wearing a t-shirt, you know. It's so fucking theatrical there, and obviously that was my entire childhood. Is you go see a show, it's this fucking, the big costumes and like the crazy lights, and it's a whole thing to kind of escape your environment. So we grew up with that, and I feel like a lot of it just kind of synced in, you know, unconsciously, you know.
Because now you have like fashion covers coming out every month. So talk to me about how important those are for a band like this, because now you have the music to back it up too. So.
I think, you know, we've always wanted to do something. You know, for bands, it's you go play concerts, you do the thing, and it's cool. But I think there's only a few bands that we started doing fashion shows and playing on the runway while models are walking by, and Remington's literally hanging. There's a video of Remington hanging above.
I love playing to screaming fans, but I also love playing to just appalled people that have no idea what the fuck they're watching. That's almost as exciting to me as playing in front of just screaming people. People are just like, this.
Yeah, when we did Fashion Week here, and Remington literally was crawling on he was wearing a dress on all these like housewives that were in the front row,
crawling
and
on them.
Their faces look like mortified, and it's like kind of the coolest thing that you. And then after that, they're like, "That was the coolest thing," because they don't know how to react, you know. And I think that's the fashion world. I think is just outlandish,
and everyone just takes themselves so seriously. So when I like play these fashion shows, I just try to make the biggest fucking ass of myself, because everyone's just sitting there, we're just like, you know, just like sitting front row, at fucking 10 p.m. with sunglasses on. You know, it's actually daytime right now. There's actually light peeking in, so you're good.
But especially L.A. Fashion Week. Yeah. It's like the Real Housewives are sitting front row and whoever, right? It's, interesting.
Everyone takes themselves so fucking seriously.
But I think also going to the fashion part of it, we've now realized, you know, as the fan base has grown, and Emerson's been so good about curating and making, like, you know, taking staples that we do and making our own fashion lines and stuff. Walking into a room of people wearing, like, your band t-shirts is cool. But when you walk into a room and everyone's styled into, like, what you've created into this world, it's, like, one of the coolest things that you've created this generational, like,
the
difference.
The environment around the venue before the doors open. Like, you know it's a Palais show. You know?
They have the makeup. They have, like, all the scarves.
And it's, like, it's so cool. Like, you'll know when you see our audience just, like, if you, like, go down the street and, like, see a line for the Grateful Dead, like, you'll know you're at a Grateful Dead show, you know?
Or Mike Hem.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
And that they were one of the only few that have done that in the past 20 years, you know? So that was that, you know, that's always been something that we've always been so heavily on, because it was obviously the 70s bands were all, and they were on their different wavelengths, but I feel like there's only been a few bands every decade that have done something on the theatrics, and we love the theatric part of rock and roll.
So. And, like, we've been planning kind of this traveling festival circus type event that it will encompass, like, everything that is the Palais world, and it's like a fully themed environment, almost like a goth Disneyland or something.
If you need a juggler, I'm there. No, not really. If you want to, just going back a little bit, you know, I know that you actually, I think Carl Barat actually opened for you this last tour, which is like your dream, because you love the Libertines,
idol,
right?
Look at that smile right now. You can't even hide it. I don't get this happy.
It was like, I think all of our favorite tour we've ever been on. It was like 2 weeks of just the craziest.
Yeah. Carl, we just flew in from Denver. We landed we landed at 5 p.m. You know, of course, we have a show in Denver one night. We had to fly to Glasgow, play a show the next night. I'm like, this makes no sense, but fine, we're gonna do it. We get to the venue. Carl pulls up and he's in his dressing room. I'm like, I'm gonna go say hi. The guys, let's go. Knock on the door. I'm like, hey, we're so happy you're here. Thank you. He's like, yeah, of course. All right, cool. That's so cool. We met him. And, like, 2 seconds later, he comes banging on the door. He's like, boys, let's do a fucking shot. Let's go. And then I'm like, okay, cool. And it was a party for a week straight. Just him standing side stage with a bottle pouring us shots. I'm like, my hero literally is standing side stage watching every single show, asking about every song we have, like, listening to demos.
Like, it was so crazy. And just, like, even, like, backstage after the show, we were just, like, he'd just be sitting with an acoustic guitar, and we'd just be covering just Beatles songs, just, you know, just jamming and just having some wine and just, like, having some drinks and just like singing songs with each other. It was fucking
I think magical. Before our European tour starts in January, we're gonna go, they have a hotel called the Albion Rooms.
The Libertines have their own hotel.
In Margate.
Yeah. And then I think they have an incredible studio there, and we're gonna go and write some songs with them.
Does Pete hang around there?
Yeah. Pete and Carl knows how much, like, the Libertines have meant so much to me as you know, as a kid and growing up and everything. So on my birthday, I was so fucked up, and he's like FaceTimes me. I'm like, oh, cool, Carl's FaceTiming me. Happy birthday. And he's like sitting there with Pete. He's like, hey, mate, we just listened to the whole record. It's fucking sick. Like, we love you guys. Can't wait to see you. I'm like, this isn't real.
I hope you recorded that.
Oh, yeah. It was funny. My mom was like over refilming. I'm like, this is the sickest thing.
And he's so drunk. He's like, one of his eyes twitches. Like, I thank you so much.
Amazing. Well, so you just toured with Youngblood. So I had that going. And Mod Sun, too.
It's interesting. It's like, so doing the tour with Carl literally like a week after the Youngblood tour. And obviously, because the pandemic has been such a heavy thing. And for the Youngblood tour, it was like, if you're not wearing a mask and you're
especially in America,
50 feet away, like, you couldn't even look at them if you weren't wearing a mask. It was the weirdest thing. So there's no hanging out. There was no, like, actual communication. The guitar player were really good friends. We couldn't even see each other. We had to, like, secretly, like, run away to, like, hang out with us. And he's like, don't tell anyone I'm here.
The restrictions on the American tour, because it was the first tour in America,
right back.
So the restrictions were crazy. And obviously, if anyone backstage got sick, it's 2 weeks off.
And so much money.
It was like such an incredible tour, because we love Dom so much.
The fans though were like, that if any tour for us to open up for, that makes sense. It's like, we should just continue to grow our own community of our world and continue to make the shows a Palais experience, because doing a tour like Dom's tour was awesome because it's like-minded fans that just want to discover new music.
Yeah.
And it's like if we went on a Måneskin tour, it'd be the same thing. And then, you know, we went and did the Korn tour, and you just have a bunch of people just being like...
Yeah, because, you know, Korn fans aren't really there to discover a new act. They're right. Listen to, they're listen to Korn, you know, yeah, I get it.
True.
But it was, but it's so crazy to then you see going on tour with Korn and seeing how a band can be in their 50s and Monkey and Head are still going fucking shit. It's
fucking
crazy.
Jonathan's voice is fucking insane, and they're going so fucking hard. Yeah. They're like one of the greatest fucking live bands. It's insane.
And I'm sure you get along so well with all these bands. It's interesting because I heard there was maybe like a little beef with like Ronnie Radke, but like every band I know, you're the nicest guy. So yeah. I can't imagine you not getting along with any band. But you did have a little something with him, right?
Yeah, he's gonna use this and pick it right back up.
I think there should be like a boxing match.
That could be good.
No, my whole thing was we did a music video for Teneza, and he had another music video come out like 4 months later, and it was the same location, same concept, same everything. And I was like,
guess what? It fucking happens. It's L.A. There's only so many fucking locations
honestly,
to choose from.
Why
so
we stopped filming in L.A. Like we just film in like Prague and Budapest and stuff like that, because like every location here is in every person's video.
It's just constantly recycled.
So
gotta find new places.
So Sebastian said like a fucking like a cheeky tweet to fucking Ronnie, and then he got so mad, and then we're just like, obviously this guy is so serious, but we were just having so much fun with it. I was like,
all right, why don't we do it? Because it was during COVID, so you couldn't meet up or anything. I was like, why don't we do a rock, paper, scissors live stream? Whoever wins gets to keep the video up. Whoever loses has to take their video down. And he just
kept getting madder and madder. And we're just like, does he not know that we're just joking? I was like, does he not understand? I don't understand
how anyone could take a rock, paper, scissors game as not a joke.
He's a serious guy.
It's like, you know, it's rock, paper, scissors. It's not like we're playing blackjack or poker or something.
But Emerson always says, he's like, yeah, you two will probably be in a room and be like best friends.
I feel like they secretly love each other.
Well, speaking of videos, I think around the time this drops, Oblivion should be coming out.
Yes.
So let's talk about that video and also the tour dates that are just getting announced, because you do have some shows coming up too, right?
Yeah, the Oblivion video is one of my favorites.
It's incredible.
We've ever done.
I have seen it, truth be told. I have to confess.
It's all shot amazing. In black and white in Prague, St. Charles Bridge and the castle and stuff. We kind of used Prague as like the backdrop for this album. Because like to us, it's like one of the very few places on this earth that feels like a fully encompassed Palera world. But yeah, that video is one of my favorites we've ever done.
Shout out to Ava, she did so fucking phenomenal.
It's amazing though, seeing the work ethic of when you go to Europe and you work with people there, and it was just everyone's happy on set, everyone's down to
work. I was miserable. I was so fucking sick.
Well, it was like 3 months of tour, and
it was 3 months of tour, and then also like.
It started snowing.
I was completely sick. I was rocking like 103 fever.
Wow.
And then also, like, for some reason, I just couldn't move my body in the morning. I was just like, guys. And I started, like, crying. I'm like, I can't move my fucking body. And then they're like, you really have no choice, but we really have to do the video. I was like, you guys are the fucking worst.
But, well, it came out amazing, by the way. Yeah. I don't think people know how difficult it is to tour, and we were just talking about the fact that, as you said, the tour manager quit, and Remington, I was a bit concerned, because how is your mental health these days? I was concerned during the tour. I know it was hard.
It was really fucking rough. It was just no sleeping, and then obviously just constantly, you know, just going meet and greet, you know, VIP, doing the show, trying to meet kids after the show, not really knowing where you're going to sleep that night because the bus is so fucked. You can't really check into a hotel until, like, super fucking late. We finish our day at, like, probably 2 o'clock in the morning. I get at the hotel, like, 2:30. I then maybe get 2 hours of sleep maximum before I have to get on a flight to the next city. And then it was just, like, it was so draining. It was definitely the toughest. It's already hard
not knowing that you don't have a sense of home like when you're on the road. But when you have a tour bus, you're like, all right, cool, I have my bunk. Everything's kind of the same routine. You wake up, you get to the venue. But when it's like you're showing up to the venue, you're like, where's our bus? Oh, yeah, it's still 400 miles away. Okay, where's the gear? Well, we don't know. Okay, Let's Rent a Car, Let's Do This, and you're flying. We did 18 flights in 16 days. Wow. Like, I was just...
And then,
that'd be my worst nightmare.
Someone from our crew had strep throat, and they were in the same room as my suitcase and kind of was, like, coughing on my clothes. And so...
Never good.
I get strep throat, and so the only way I can actually sing, because my voice was completely gone because of the strep, was I had to get shots every other day in like my shoulder and my fucking ass just to get like fucking like cortisone shots just to like take down some inflammation just so I can get some notes out. So I was like fucking dying. It was definitely a test
To see how much we wanted to still do this. And, you know, for us, it's like the last thing that we would ever want to do is like let down our fans or cancel a show. And I think we've maybe canceled two shows in our entire career or something like that.
Yeah, I saw that. And I was concerned. I was with you in Europe when you got sick. So I remember that and all. But I'm glad you're better. I mean, you seem great now. And so the tour is coming up.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think at the Palladium, you started out by No Love in L.A. You're like, this is not directed towards your, you know, this audience.
Cause
we love you, L.A.
Yeah.
But you love the L.A. fans. And let's talk a little bit about the tour coming up.
Yeah, we're doing Mexico City. We have two shows. One sold out in like 10 hours.
About that.
Yeah, we leave in like a week. But yeah, Mexico City sold out in like 10 hours. And we're like, sick. Let's add a second night. Sold out. I'm like, sick. This is awesome. Europe, we're doing like Lithuania, Romania, Czech Republic, like
Istanbul,
literally 26. Greece. We're doing 26 like countries in Europe from January through April, basically, or end of March or whatever. And it's half the tour sold out, and it's like some of these places we've never been, and it's like 4,000 caps on our first time being there. I'm like, the European crowd has been so good to us, and like the UK in London, we went from like 250 to 1500, 2000, 3500 now to 5000. I'm like, it's crazy because you're like, all right, cool, let's keep on going up. And in anything in life, you're like, oh, okay, there has to be a plateau, but it just keeps on going. I'm like,
yeah, we keep looking at each other like, this is way too big. We can't. This is such a gamble. We cannot fucking play this venue. And then they're like, I was like, what are the tickets at? They're like, you're at 85% sold out. I was like, oh my god, I'm like,
America.
Make it over there, and it somehow keeps working. So it's fucking mind blowing. I fucking love Europe. I love the UK. You guys. You guys really understand us. America, got a little bit to go.
Well, I'm manifesting, but for the Forum show that will happen one day, I'm bringing Daniel to that show.
Fantastic.
For sure.
Fantastic.
So Fever Dream, just out. Check out the record. Check out the tour. I'm excited that you're in town. I can hang out with you now a little bit. I feel like I'm seeing you right after this, too. So Daniel, this was fun. We have to do this again.
Blast. Good hangs is... As the year rolls down, I'm sure you guys are going to be on some good year-end lists as well. I mean, you guys made a great record. And
Thank you
so much.
It's a lot more. You guys have a lot more music in you, and it's exciting to hear what comes next.
Yeah,
I've already finished pretty much a little bit of the next record.
There you go.
And me and Daniel will be wearing makeup and three-piece suits next time.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, but the thing, don't forget, you got to get a new tour manager.
I know. We're trying out one guy in Europe, or when we're in Mexico City, to see if he's for Europe.
So. He was the tour manager for the Libertines.
You don't want to do that again.
I can't. So. I just want to enjoy music. Can enjoy like not. I want to sleep from one.
No, but if we have the guy that tour manages,
I feel like Sebastian secretly likes the stress though. Sebastian loves when he's stressed out.
Yeah,
he's
like, one of those.
God, I hate this.
Yeah, he does.
All right, well, guys, always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming in as always. The fifth time you come in, you'll be playing the Forum.
I like that.
All right, thanks, guys. Always great to see you.
We're headlining the Forum.
Headlining the Forum.
This is
Well, that was awesome. The brothers in Palo Royale, myself and Daniel Cohen. Always a fun time. If you like the show, please make sure to rate and review the show. We'll see you soon. We have a lot of exciting guests coming up. Have a great holiday and see you next time.